Our next guest on the show very briefly is Professor Rhys. Oh man, let me try and catch you up here quickly. She's involved in the World Health Organization committees on vaccines and the elimination of polio. She's the head of SA's medicine regulator and scientific advisory chair of the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations. Also, let me skip. She's also a scientific advisor to the US National Institutes of Health. I'm rushing your CV because I know you are you're busy, Professor. Thank you so much for your time.
Not at all. No, thank you. You don't have to read the CV at all.
Now, I got you about a percentage of it. Just how you find time in your day to even speak to us. Listen, okay, so just very quickly, we just spoke about that video that went viral of Dr. Yeah. Stella Emanuel. Now, if she's not accurate or even speaking the truth, isn't that completely harmful? And probably, you know, how does she not lose her license if she's talking nonsense?
Well, look, she's doing this from the U.S., and one that I don't know what the rules are in the U.S., but I think what we're hearing is that, number one, that people are desperately keen to have drugs out there that both prevent and improve the treatment of COVID. So people are really sort of looking for anything to start to promote. However, and I heard Mark Mendelsohn earlier, totally agree with him, and I think he'd be very hard-pushed to find a specialist or expert in this country who would agree with her. Hydroxychloroquine is known not to be, at the moment, the evidence that we have from the best quality trials, large trials globally. There is currently no proof that it is effective as either a treatment or prevention therapy for COVID-19. So there is no proof. And in fact, the trial you just referred to that's starting in South Africa is organized by the World Health Organization, and it's a treatment trial. And initially it did have five arms, and one of them was hydroxychloroquine. But because of all of the global data that's emerged, that arm has been withdrawn from that trial because it's now seen not to be an effective treatment.
What do we have at the moment that we feel comfortable with in treating COVID-19, or at least symptoms?
Well, I think that this is a very important question, and it's important for listeners to know how we come to these conclusions. So we have a steroid drug called dexamethasone, which has been shown in well-executed studies, big studies, to reduce mortality and stays in hospital for people who are requiring oxygen, either just high-flow oxygen or on ventilators. So we have dexamethasone for people who are hospitalized. We know an awful lot now about the best ways to administer oxygen and who needs oxygen and what sort of oxygen flow they need to have. We have another drug called remdesivir that is looking promising. It, in a smaller study, showed that it reduced the time that people had to stay in hospital. But we have a number of new drugs that are coming through, either in trials or likely to go into trials in the next couple of months, and new categories of drugs, things we call monoclonal antibodies. So there are new categories of drugs that people are now putting into trials. But the point being, you need these big global trials properly done to say whether something does or doesn't work. So we have that data for dexamethasone, and we have it for remdesivir. We know a lot about oxygen. We know a lot about how to treat some of the blood clotting problems that we see as well.
Dexamethasone, am I right, is a drug manufactured here in South Africa. It's a cortisone. Am I right? We know
that's
more or less
right.
some about that. The last drug, the latter drug that you mentioned, what else is that being used for?
Remdesivir. So yeah. Remdesivir at the moment, the indication for use is in fact for COVID. It is an antiviral drug that was under investigation previously, but when COVID came along, they diverted the research to look to see whether it had an effect. And in the studies that have led to it being used, it reduced the stay in hospital by 4 days. The study was not big enough to show if it had an effect on mortality, and that's why we're doing ongoing studies such as the Solidarity trial, but other large studies to see whether it does indeed have an effect on mortality or not.
How quickly do these trials move? I mean, how quickly are you discovering new information about the treatment of COVID-19?
Yes, it's a very good question, and in fact we've got a radical new way of doing studies. So if you take the Solidarity study, and South Africa is only one of 40 countries that are contributing to this. So what we're trying to do across the world is have big coordinated studies with multiple countries asking the same question with the same study protocol, so that we move really, instead of taking a year to complete it, it can take literally months to complete it, a few months to complete.
That's very, very good. Is the virus changing? Is it making it harder for you? Because you hear so many stories about it affecting in different ways. It's manifesting in different ways. Is that nonsense or?
No. I think when we say we're learning more about it and how it's affecting the body and how these waves of epidemic come, that is understanding what the virus is doing. But fortunately, so far, we haven't seen large, rapid changes in the virus, mutations. Okay. So when we say we're learning more and we're suddenly saying we're worried about the brain or we're worried about the skin, it's not because the virus has changed. It's because we are learning more about the clinical impact of this virus. But importantly, so far, we're not seeing major mutations and rapid mutations because that would then become a big challenge in terms of developing a vaccine.
New symptoms come along. I mean, you're picking up on new symptoms, am I right? Although, is that a bit misleading? Are people maybe attributing the wrong symptoms to COVID-19?
Well, you have to be very careful. You're quite right that you just because you see something, you can't say that it's virus is cause and effect. But some of the less common symptoms, the common symptoms, the respiratory symptoms, the sore throats and the headaches, the things that now everyone has heard about, those are so common that you could quickly say you know that. For the less common symptoms, we've seen really, you know, the less common symptoms, some of the things we've seen happening in the brain or in the kidney or in the pancreas. For the less common things, you need to then be documenting it. And clinicians and scientists need to write those up and say, we've seen this case. Has anyone else seen it? And then you start to see a pattern of less common symptoms that you can start to attribute.
Just in closing quickly, any misperceptions out there that you want to clear up? Maybe just one of them, a common misperception about COVID-19 that gets people anxious, unnecessarily anxious.
Well, the one thing I would say, and I would really appeal to all clinicians who are prescribing, doctors, nurses, is please don't go with rumors. Because we do hear, for example, that some GPs, some clinicians are prescribing things like chloroquine and steroids or aspirin. Please wait until we have the evidence, because some of these products, if they are used, may in fact cause harm, and some of them might be a problem if somebody then subsequently gets COVID and we want to use other drugs because they've already been primed with a drug that in fact was completely ineffectual. So our real appeal would be to everyone, please don't use unproven products. Do the things that we know. Eat well, try and exercise, and keep yourself well, and try and get out into the fresh air so it's good for your mental health as well. Those things are important.
And last question, how far are we from a vaccine that is effective or even drugs that would cure COVID-19?
Well, the movement towards a vaccine is unprecedented globally. We've got over 200 candidate vaccines that are now in the pipeline. And we've got nearly 20 now in early or later stage clinical trials, including a couple that are in the final stages of clinical trials where we're now enrolling thousands of people. So in terms of when we're going to get one, first of all, we have to show they're effective. And that's why we have to fast track all these very large clinical trials to show that they work. Once we have that, we've got to be able to manufacture them. So in parallel to these clinical trials, we're identifying manufacturing sites. And South Africa is also putting its hand up and saying we're interested in being a manufacturing site. So in terms of when would we have it, I think in truth, if we have an effective vaccine, at the earliest, I would say it would be in the middle of next year. I know that some people are saying even this year. I think that's highly optimistic. And possibly towards the end of 2021, we would have vaccine that would then be manufactured and available, but not for the whole world's population. We would then still have to be selective because of limited supplies at that point about who we gave it to.
Professor Helen Rees, thank you for your time. I know it's precious. Get back to your important meetings in your day. Appreciate it. Love to catch up with you again. And thanks for the great work that you're doing and for informing us.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Thank you, Prof. There you go. Professor Helen Rees speaking to us. She's also leading SS COVID-19 drug trial. And I hope that was a whole lot to take in, obviously. But what we'll do is we'll put up the podcast for you on jacarandafm.com so you can go listen to it again. Maybe share it along to people. I always say, share the truth with people that are anxious about the rumors, right?
Wake up, wake up. With Martin Visser on Breakfast. Every weekday from 6 to 9.